a Your Vote 2012 conversation with Rick Bennett, Republican for U.S. Senate. Rick Bennett, former president of the Maine Senate, has said that the U.S. is not a country that's deeply divided, it's a country that's closely divided, and that Congress can find some common sense solutions to major problems. He's hoping that message will resonate with Republican voters in the state's GOP primary on June 12th, as he faces off against five other candidates. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we'll talk with Rick Bennett about the choice he represents to those voters and about how he would tackle some of the most important issues in this campaign, including the economy and job creation. Join the conversation, email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a message to the Maine Calling Facebook page, or call 1-800-399-3566. Rick Bennett, Republican candidate for U.S. Senate. This is Maine Calling. And Rick Bennett, welcome to the program.
It's great to be here, Keith.
I want to start with some news here at the top.
Sure.
We had an event-filled Republican state convention this weekend in which the Ron Paul supporters turned out in numbers and actually had a big impact on that event. What's your take? And you hold a particular position of interest with respect to this.
True indeed. I've long been an activist in the Republican Party, and I have the privilege now of serving as Republican National Committee man. My term actually ends at the close of the Republican National Convention in Tampa this August.
What's your take of what happened?
Well, you know, what happened was democracy. People got elected in the caucuses to come support their presidential candidate at the state convention. Our convention and caucus system means that the delegates to the national convention, which picks the presidential nominee, are actually elected at the caucuses. So the Ron Paul people and the Mitt Romney folks contested, as we remember back in February, March, those caucuses, and the delegates that were elected there came to the convention, and the Ron Paul folks turned their people out, and they were able to upset the prescribed apple cart, and they got the control of the state convention.
As part of that apple cart, by tradition, is an opportunity for candidates for office, including you,
right,
to speak to the party on a statewide platform. That didn't happen.
It didn't happen in the conventional way. No, we actually go to the dais and we speak from the podium, and we have our supporters surrounding us. And you know, I was scheduled to speak at 3:10 p.m. yesterday, and I had hundreds of supporters there that wanted to hear my message, and a lot of delegates who wanted to hear my message that didn't know me as well. And I said, you know, it seems to me that these people deserve to hear my message. And so I decided I would speak at 3:10. And I organized a sort of rump speech-making opportunity in the lobby of the Civic Center. I stood on the steps with my family and literally had 300-400 people gather around and hear my speech from the steps. And so then once having set the bar there, some of the other candidates followed suit.
You have certainly more than that listening to us right now. So here's another opportunity for you.
Great. Thank
you. I paraphrased at the top of the show a statement that you made in a recent forum, I believe, where you said the country is not deeply divided, but closely divided. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
It means that I think we focus on the issues which divide us, and we have to remember in the height of partisanship and this hyper-partisan environment, in the height of an election season, that there's actually a lot more that unites us than divides us as a nation. And we just, you know, while we debate these really pressing issues, it's just important to remember that we live, we're really blessed to live in a wonderful country. We have the freedom of expression, the freedom to do what the Ron Paul folks did at the convention yesterday and express ourselves. And I look for opportunities during a campaign to listen to voters and to find out how I can be a better public servant.
You would like to replace Senator Olympia Snowe, who stepped down after years of service, citing real frustration with a political gridlock, which she perceived was where politics was taking over and the business of the people just wasn't getting done, and that there was a loss of sort of decorum, I guess, in the Senate. Was she right? And what would you do to change that?
Well, she's absolutely right about the loss of decorum. There, you know, the Senate term is 6 years, and it's 6 years by construction, so that senators can be more thoughtful, be more deliberative, work together over a longer period of time, and not just go election to election. What we're faced with is a Senate which just seems to be doing, following the daily news cycle in terms of issues of the day, not being thoughtful, and in fact worrying about, you know, how many seats they're going to have in the next election rather than dealing with the generational issues which are confronting America.
One of the big issues, of course, this time around is the economy. What can the Senate do, if anything, to stimulate the U.S. economy?
Well, I think government role in stimulating the economy is fraught with broken promises and broken performance. I'm a businessman. I've served in public office, but for the better part of the last 10 years, I've been running successfully a business here in Maine, taking a money-losing startup and turning it into a globally recognized firm. The name of my company is GMI Ratings. We employ 42 people in Maine. We have smaller offices in New York and San Diego and London, serving global clientele. And I can tell you what I want from government as a businessman is the same thing I've heard from many business people, small business people across Maine, which is they want predictability. They want to know what the rules are, and they want them to stay as they are for an extended period of time so they can make investment decisions and other business decisions. And unfortunately, it's the ground is always moving under business. And so it's really hard to make a 10-year investment decision when political decisions are being made on a 2-year basis.
We hear a lot about taxes, tax policy being a driver of some of this. And some would argue in your party that we really should stay away from any proposal to increase taxes on the wealthiest Americans because they are the quote-unquote job creators. Do you believe that?
I think taxes are not the first problem that we're facing. I think spending is the problem that we have as a nation, as a government. One of the principal reason I'm running is I have a 16-year-old daughter and a 14-year-old son. I'm going to be releasing them into the world in a very short number of years. And I'm looking at the United States Senate, as Olympia Snow said, totally dysfunctional. Not only are they passing trillion-dollar spending over what we're taking in every single year, but they're also not even passing a budget. And I think one of the things that separates a hunter-gatherer society from a civilized society is that governments are formed and they take responsibility for allocating resources and making decisions, and we haven't seen such basic responsibilities being met under the current leadership of the U.S. Senate. That needs to change.
What are we overspending on?
Everything. We're spending, as far as I'm concerned, everything is on the table, whether it's military spending for weapon systems that the Pentagon says they don't need but some Congress people think is a good idea, whether it is foreign entanglements, whether it is entitlement spending, whether it's discretionary domestic spending. I think we just need to get our spending under control.
Are we spending too much on the Navy ships that Bath Ironworks makes?
Well, you know, this is a classic case, right? In my view, we make a decision. We want to build a certain number of destroyers. That decision's been made, and it is the job of Maine's congressional delegation, and I certainly as the next U.S. senator, to be arguing that the facts, which are the decision having been made to buy those destroyers, it's best to build them here in Maine because of the unparalleled quality of work here in Maine and the unblemished record of BIW.
We started talking about taxes, and I understand it's not a priority issue. But do you support the current tax structure, for example?
Of course not. I mean, the current tax structure is a mess. 66,000 pages of tax code. You know what people really object to and what I object to as a citizen is a tax code where the wealthiest interests, whether they're business or whatever they may be, can effectively change the tax code in an unfair way to benefit themselves. And a simpler more straightforward tax code that doesn't involve 66,000 pages is surely going to be fairer.
Sounds like a flat tax, or
I don't support a flat tax. I think a progressive income tax is what we have. There's a constitutional amendment that allows for it, and I don't think we have to be that radical. It's all of the carve-outs, the special exemptions, the special tax treatments. Whether it's for whatever the special interest group, there's a lot of them. Some of it is corporate welfare. I fight against corporate welfare first and foremost in our system, because people feel that they're getting a raw treatment, and there's a sense, a palpable sense across the political spectrum in this state and across the country, that big government, big business are often working collusion together against the interests of ordinary citizens, and particularly small business that's trying hard to compete, and they can't compete against that power.
Would that include tax breaks for major oil companies?
Absolutely. There are special tax treatments for the oil industry, and there's special tax treatments for many industries that need to be reviewed and need to be eliminated.
Rick Bennett, Republican for U.S. Senate. Join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Let's stay on the topic of energy since we're there.
Sure.
You would oppose tax breaks for oil companies. What about tax breaks or incentives for alternative energy companies that are trying to develop in anticipation of higher oil costs down the road?
Look, I think the biggest problem we have is that government is involved in picking with winners and losers in our economy. And I think that shouldn't happen. We should be interested in low energy prices, and the market can help dictate that. But when, you know, we're seeing windmills, for instance, pop up all across the landscape in Maine, along our mountaintops, and a lot of people are saying, where did these come from all of a sudden? And then the second question is, why aren't my energy prices lower? And the truth is that a lot of these windmills are built there because the federal government or some government is providing special tax provisions or some renewable energy credits or something, which is not really in the market's domain. It's in a political domain.
We also see proposals for shipping oil through environmentally sensitive areas. Keystone Pipeline.
I support the Keystone Pipeline. I think energy overall is a question not only of economic security for our country, it's a question of national security. I mean, we shouldn't be depending for our energy sources on places of the world that are volatile and people are shooting at us. We should be becoming energy independent. And that means, for me, looking at all sources of energy and in an environmentally responsible way, committing ourselves to, as much as possible, getting our energy from North America.
Does that include offshore drilling off the coast of New England and nuclear power?
I support nuclear power. I think the technologies are such that we can pursue nuclear power afresh with new technology, make it safer even than it has been. Look, I don't know. There's been a federal policy ban on offshore drilling in the Gulf of Maine off New England for a long time. I see no reason to change that. There are stacks of permits awaiting approval for drilling in southern waters by companies that have drilled there before. There are proven reserves. I haven't seen any level of evidence that there's reserves in the Gulf of Maine that are worth pursuing.
We have a tweet from a listener, John, who wants to know, what role will social issues such as same-sex marriage and abortion play in the upcoming primary and election?
Well, I think there are a number of Republicans who have strong views on those issues, and some people are driven by them. So to the extent that there are voters out there that this is their issue, then obviously it's going to have an impact. But I can say most people are concerned across the spectrum, as in my campaigning, with the economic issues this year, they're concerned largely about the reach of government And the expense of government. And they agree with me that we need to start taking a hard look at our spending, which is a bipartisan issue. I mean, the spending, we are where we are, not because of Democrats and not because of Republicans, but because both parties have found it easier to spend money than to cut spending. And this is why we are where we are.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions for Rick Bennett, Republican for U.S. Senate. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Next time on The World, a primary battle in Indiana. At issue, Senator Richard Lugar's record on national security. His Tea Party critics say he's too willing to compromise with Democrats. Republican moderates disagree.
No, I think folks should reflect further on the importance of our speaking with one voice internationally.
Our story from Indiana, next time on The World.
Tune in for The World this afternoon at 3. Broadcast of Your Vote 2012 Maine Calling is made possible by listeners like you and by AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/me. By Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine, the happiest people in business, Garand.com. And by Lammert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine, with offices in Portland and Blue Hill.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today, a Your Vote 2012 interview with Rick Bennett, Republican candidate for U.S. Senate. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Before the break, a listener wanted to know about social issues. I'm going to run by a few of
them.
Do you support the 1973 Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision?
Yeah, I'm for a woman's right to choose. I have voted that way in the Maine legislature. However, I oppose taxpayer funding of abortion, and I've also voted against partial birth abortion procedures.
Same-sex marriage?
I believe that a marriage is between one man, one woman. I do not believe this is a federal issue. I believe this is a state issue, and I respect the express will of Maine voters.
And do you believe that employers should be allowed to deny their employees certain benefits, contraception, for example, based upon their moral beliefs?
Well, there's a lot of issues wrapped up in that statement. And I can tell you as an employer, you're implying that employers are providing health care benefits. Not all employers do. I don't have trouble with the – as long as they're with a carve-out for religious institutions with that particular mandate on contraception. But I can tell you that what I really object to as a business manager is having to sit down – every year with my CFO and make a choice for all of my employees about what health care coverage they get, because this is an accident. It's a legacy issue from the World War II era, and we should get to the point in health care where individuals and individual families can make these choices. And if an employer wants to subsidize, which I certainly would, we would.
We'll go to calls in a moment, but I want to follow up on the Affordable Care Act.
Sure.
Is it good policy? If not, what would you change?
Look, like Derigo Health here in Maine, I'm afraid that the Affordable Health Care Act was largely passed for ideological reasons rather than practical reasons. And I mean, any act that would require the hiring of thousands of new IRS agents is suspect in my view. And the challenge with the Affordable Health Care Act is not only is its constitutionality in question legitimately, but I think as a practical matter, it doesn't deal most effectively with most of the issues which Maine people care about. And when I was president of the Maine Senate, in a bipartisan way, I passed a Consumer Choice Health Care Act in Maine, which was repealed, unfortunately, when Derigo Health was installed. But that would have given Maine citizens' choices about their health care, similar to those enjoyed by federal employees.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Let's go to South Portland and Frederick. Hi, Frederick. Welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, Frederick.
Rick, it's safe to say that you would not receive my vote because I am certainly not a conservative voter, but I wanted to ask you then, from a liberal perspective, a moderate to a liberal perspective, that let's just take the economy, for instance, if I could start there with you. During the Eisenhower, Johnson, Kennedy, Nixon, Carter years, we saw a boom in this economy based on people who received greater income, paying their fair share, Eisenhower would argue. That people that made an awful lot of money paid an awful lot of taxes on their upper income, on the top, rather, of their income. Since Reagan, we've seen this slippery slope that has led us to this point where we are bankrupt, where the government has not been taxing corporations and high-income tax earners fairly, Rick. Now, I think that it's a fallacy to trumpet the old conservative conundrum that all we need to do is continue to cut and cut and cut, so that now we're seeing schools closing, more than 50 million Americans without health insurance. Rick, it's very clear to me and to moderate and liberal America, that which we are, the 99%. The 99%, Rick, sees a fair taxation, to have a fair corporate tax rate, and to increase the marginal tax rates on the wealthiest of people, at least into the 45% range, beyond 50%, on the top margin of their income range.
Yeah, Frederick, we get your point. Rick, go ahead.
I understand the argument. I do believe that our fundamental problem with our deficits is our uncontrolled spending appetite. And it's not just, I mean, if we look at what we're creating, it can't be solved with tax increases. I mean, not only do we have $16 trillion in national bonded indebtedness, we also have $4 trillion of unfunded liability in our federal employee retirement system. We have $17 trillion of unfunded liability in our Social Security system, and we have $89 trillion of unfunded liability in our Medicare system. We need to deal with the spending first. Now, I'm not one who – I'm certainly willing to look at taxes, but what happened in the U.S. Senate recently with the Buffett rule was they put this little canard out, which would have increased taxes on the wealthiest – but wouldn't have dealt with our deficit at all. I mean, it was going to be $1.1 trillion in the following year and going up to $1.1 billion the following year and going up to $4 billion when we're spending trillions of dollars of deficits. It's not the fundamental problem.
What you mentioned Social Security in that answer, and I'm wondering what if we're spending too much on Social Security, not running the program right? What's the answer there?
Well, there's a number of problems with it. I mean, it is not a trust fund. Now, in business, a trust fund means something. You have trustees who are unconflicted and who are fiduciaries. We have trustees in the Social Security Trust Fund and the Medicare Trust Fund that are conflicted. The Secretary of Treasury is a trustee. And what does the trust decide to invest in? U.S. government bonds. Does that return the goods to the Social Security system? Of course not. And so it's really a fallacy. We don't have trust funds. I think there's a number of things that we could do. We could make we could give choice to participants in the Social Security system as to when they retire, which would solve a lot of the problems. The problems in the Social Security system can be bridged.
Privatized.
Well, I think it should be looked at, but I've cautiously. I mean, if you go to other countries like Chile or a country like Australia, which is in the Commonwealth and has the fourth largest pension system in the world, they have a mandatory set aside from paychecks, but they give much more latitude to people to invest. And so, and that works very well. They've got a very well-funded, sustainable system.
Means testing for Social Security?
Not for Social Security. I would support means testing, however, for Medicare, because I think the nature of the problem there requires it.
1-800-399-3566 to Camden and Eric. Hi, Eric. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing? And thanks for having the show. And I appreciate Mr. Bennett taking the time to speak with us this afternoon.
Thanks, Eric.
A quick question is really just to do with energy. And it was mentioned, the Keystone XL was mentioned a little bit earlier, and that's a project that's obviously controversial, but we all know would certainly bring some, ethical oil, if you will, down into the States. But there's also a pipeline proposal, actually, to bring a lot of Canadian oil sands oil, down from Montreal in the reversal of the Portland pipeline, something called the Trailbreaker pipeline reversal proposed by Enbridge. And I'm wondering if Mr. Bennett supports that or has looked into that and could help us perhaps bring some more economic opportunity down into Portland.
Thanks for the question. I do not know about that project in any sufficient detail to have a position, but I'd certainly like to learn about it and would encourage you to send me some information about it at rick@bennettfromaine.com.
I will do that. I appreciate it.
All right, Eric, thanks for calling. Let's go now to Portland and another Eric. We have a lot of Erics today. Eric, go ahead, please.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I was calling, and forgive me if I misunderstood, Mr. Bennett, but I thought I heard you say that you weren't for the government picking winners and losers when it comes to the energy markets, but not a moment before that, I thought I heard you say that you were for subsidies for oil companies, which sounds like a contradiction, so I would need that explained. And one real quick other related contradiction that I thought I heard you say was, you wanted to increase our energy independence, but you're not in support of alternative forms of energy. So I just need both of those contradictions explained.
I'm glad that you gave me the chance to correct the misunderstanding. No, I categorically said that I believe oil subsidies, tax subsidies for oil companies, special tax treatment should be eliminated.
And what about energy independence while not?
I support energy independence, as I said. What I don't support is picking winners and losers in the energy industry. That includes oil subsidies or tax subsidies for oil companies. It also means, for me, special breaks on renewables that haven't proven sustainable.
Okay, quick follow-up. Do you feel that the government has any role in pursuing and researching and developing alternatives to oil energy?
I support government's role in basic research, but not in the development phase of research.
All right, Eric, thanks for calling. I want to talk a little bit about free trade, and then we'll go back to the phones. How would you assess our current overall free trade policy? Obviously, country by country, it may vary. But are there some things that you would like to see that are different, that are more, for example, protective of U.S. industry?
Well, I think we have to pursue it on a country by country basis, and there are a number of trade agreements that I can tell you. I was suspicious about NAFTA. Back when it was passed, I think there are a lot. If you look at the into the details of these trade agreements, there's often special carve-outs for powerful industries. And I would, in reviewing any trade agreements as a member of the Senate, I would be looking for fairness and look at the particular situations to see how we are being treated by the counterparty. How is the other country, how have they acted in the past? And what special provisions are granted U.S. companies and foreign companies in those trade agreements?
China, obviously, mm-hmm. is a big player, and some argue that we're not being tough enough with China. Others argue we have to play gingerly. What's your position?
Well, I think the Chinese have propped up their economy based on American consumer activity for a long time. I think the chickens are coming home to roost in China on that, and they're having to decouple their currency from the dollar, and that is leveling the playing field, and the balance of trade with China is trending in the right direction as a result.
All right, we're going to take more of your calls in a moment. I want to take an email from Debbie, who writes, since many of our senators seem to have little respect for each other, partly because they may live in their home states, are you committed to moving your family to D.C.?
Absolutely not. I think that my family will continue to live in Maine. I love Maine. Fortunately, there are lots of flights from Portland and Bangor that can get you to Washington in a hurry, and most of our congressional delegation takes advantage of that. I have to say something else about this, because I think people should look at the track record when they're wondering about partisanship. And in the year 2000, when it was the height of the Bush-Gore debacle and hyper-partisanship reigned supreme, we were confronted in the state Senate at the time with a tied Senate. There were 17 Republicans, 17 Democrats, and one independent. And rather than fall into dysfunction, as many people predicted, I said, let's go a different way. And so I was the primary architect of a power-sharing arrangement in the state Senate where power was shared equally. And that's why I ended up being president of the Senate with a minority of Republicans in the chamber. And Mike Mishu and I, during that period, shared power, and we did the people's business in an amicable way that allowed all members of the Senate and the public to express their views.
Our guest is Rick Bennett. He's a Republican running for U.S. Senate. We're going to take another short break, and when we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the Next On Point, Facebook goes public. The world's largest social network readies its IPO. Do you want in? That's coming up on the Next On Point from NPR.
Tune in for On Point tonight at midnight. Broadcast of Your Vote 2012 Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners like you and by AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/me. By Garant Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine. The happiest people in business. Garand.com, and by Lammert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine, with offices in Portland and Blue Hill.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, a Your Vote 2012 interview with Republican candidate for U.S. Senate Rick Bennett. He's former Maine Senate president and Republican National Committeeman, current Republican National Committeeman. He's a native of Maine. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. Let's go to Bath and Mariah. Hi, Mariah. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hello. I served with Rick for quite a number of years in the legislature.
We did indeed, Mariah. It's so nice to talk with
well,
you.
Well, Rick, I hope, first of all, I do hope that you've changed your mind on gay rights, because you were opposed to every bill we had then. And you know I have a gay son, and you know it was terrible for me. But that's not the big issue right now. I think we're coming around to be a little more sensible about that. But what I want to know, have you come to see the high-level waste site on our shore here in Wiscasset? And, you know, you're for nuclear power. And I want to know, how long do you think we will have to deal with the waste right here on our shore? And what will we do with it?
Thanks for the question, Mariah. It's nice to talk with you. I have not been to see the high-level waste site there, and I'd love it if you would take me down there and show me what we're dealing with there. I'd appreciate the education.
The bigger question, I guess, is that, you know, the U.S. government has sort of been responsible for dealing with this waste. As we talk about, oh, I'm open, you know, we're open for considering nuclear power, but that problem hasn't been solved.
You know, unfortunately, in our world, all energy sources require dealing with the results, emissions, you know, whether it's air pollution, whether it is nuclear waste, whether it is, you know, taking coal out of mines, it's all unpleasant business. And I think it's time that we recognized the costs that are associated with waste streams, and those costs get internalized into the waste streams as much as into the energy sources as much as possible. But there are no easy answers here. It's all messy, unpleasant business, and it is polluting.
I want to ask you a hindsight question as we move into foreign policy. U.S. policy in Iraq and Afghanistan. What were we right to do? What we did? What would we do different? What would you do differently?
In 2003, I supported going into Iraq. In all candor, I believe that was a mistake in hindsight, and I think a lot of people feel that. You know, we were attacked as a nation in September 2001, and we wanted to react and needed to react against our enemies and find the terrorists and root them out wherever they were. As it turned out, I think Iraq was a mistake. I think going into Afghanistan and dealing with al-Qaeda as it existed and supported by the Taliban in Afghanistan was the right move. And here it is, 10 years later, 11 years later, we're still there. The president says we're going to have some presence now until 2024, I believe. And for me, that's too long. We need to get our troops home, and we need to deal with our domestic issues.
Let's go to Winthrop and Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thank you very much, Keith, and thank you, Mr. Bennett, for being on the radio this morning. I just would like to say, first of all, you've already proven yourself, Mr. Bennett, to be an innovator by taking your speech out in the hallway. It was very much appreciated yesterday.
Thanks.
I was a delegate, and I was there, and we were all pretty frustrated. I would like to ask you what you think about the process we went through this past weekend with the convention, with it being pretty much hijacked by four lawyers from the Romney camp who kept questioning every decision made by we the people and delaying our process beyond even rational means. How do you feel about what happened this weekend?
Elizabeth, first of all, were you a Ron Paul delegate?
I was a Ron Paul delegate, but I am open to suggestion on the congressmen and the senators.
Well, first of all, thank you for your action and activism and being part of the solution to our country's issues by actually engaging the political process, Elizabeth. What I felt was that the convention was a travesty. People were frustrated. They were disappointed. They didn't have an opportunity to speak. They didn't have an opportunity to have their voices heard. And the voting was largely, as you were suggesting, it was too lawyered up. And I think what was being played out there was a game in preparation for the national convention rather than an honest expression of the will of the people of Maine. And that is sad. As a delegate, as national committee man, I will be a delegate to the national convention in Tampa. And I may be the only one or one of two or three who will be unchallenged there. And I will fight to make sure Maine's delegation is seated at the national convention. Maine voices should be heard as they were expressed at our state convention in due process.
Can you explain the end game there also? What is it that the Ron Paul people are aiming for at the national convention?
I think they want a seat at the table. I think they want their voices heard. I think they want to give Ron Paul a speaking slot at the convention and a chance to express themselves, and I think that's terrific.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. We're going to vary our subject matter here, and we're going to go back to energy, and we're going to Lovell and Jay. Hi, Jay, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Mr. Bennett, you know, it occurs to me that all these subsidies that are going to the big wind farms, it's got to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars. The energy that's going to be produced is going to be more expensive than what we're currently paying for. Now, this hundreds of millions of dollars of subsidies that are going to these people, that's our money. That's tax money. Why, instead of going to one person who's going to try and jump the energy rates like this, why don't they just give me 10 grand of my own money back? I can put a wind tower up on my property. I can put a dozen or so solar panels up, and I can have electricity for the rest of my life free. That's my question, and no one seems to be able to answer that.
Well, I think the honest answer to your question is that you don't control lobbying power in Washington as an individual, and so you can't have the you won't get your $10,000, but big companies will, whether they're in alternative energy or in big oil. And I just fundamentally oppose picking winners and losers. I mean, we saw what happened with Solyndra. We're seeing the same thing now with wind farms, and it's not driving energy prices down for Maine people, and that should be the end goal.
Any chance that that the individual might be able to be in charge of his own destiny vis-a-vis energy in terms of renewables for what I said,
Well,
get some of the tax money back to the people.
Yeah,
it's possible. The technology is there.
I would be in support of looking at I'd be in support of if there are benefits to be given out, I would much prefer to see them go through consumers rather than producers, because then you'd be having some consumer choice involved. And there's a lot of people in Maine, and particularly I live in rural Maine. I live in Oxford, and there's a lot of people that live off the grid up there, and they're making tough choices, and they're producing their own energy, and they should not be subsidizing other people's choices in their tax money. It's just fundamentally a flawed policy.
Let's go to Portland and Fred. Fred, you got about 30 seconds here.
Hey, just a quick question to follow up on the issue of winners and losers being selected by the government. What role does the market have to play in being able to determine whether or not the energy choices that we make are actually good for the future? So that's to say, if we stick with oil and petroleum products, and you believe the science of climate change, doesn't the market kind of fail in that regard because it's going to continue to pick that as a cheap energy source as opposed to some of these other ones?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. I believe that you're right about that. There are what are called, economists call them externalized costs. These are the costs that are born, generally thrown off on the public by polluting and by use of certain kinds of energy. Those should be, as I said earlier, internalized into the cost of the product as much as possible.
All right. Real quickly, we have a Scott calling from Woolwich. We don't have time to take his call, but he wants to know about capital gains and why they should be taxed at a lower rate than earned wages.
Well, I think that I question that, whether they should. I think the what we should do is drive down income taxes for people and capital gains. I'll tell you one thing I oppose, which is special treatment for hedge fund managers of their what are performance bonuses. Their treatment is capital gains. They shouldn't be treated as capital gains. They should be treated as ordinary income. So there's a lot of abuse in the tax system we need to right.
And with that, we're out of time. Rick Bennett, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Keith. I appreciate it.
Rick Bennett, former Maine Senate President and Republican National Committeeman. He's a native of Maine. You can listen to our other Your Vote 2012 interviews by visiting our Facebook page or going to mpbn.net. And we'll be talking with the other candidates for office in the coming days and weeks. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer Cindy Hahn answered your calls. Lindsay Maynard ran the board. We had additional help from John Keimel and from the MPBN web team. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.